Podcast People's Podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think. And I was gigging at the weekend, and it is interesting. I was gigging in Chiswick, and I said to them, "You're all stressed about the budget, aren't you? You're all stressed about the budget. You're all scared. And some of you voted Labour, but you weren't expecting them to do Labour stuff, which seems a bit naive looking back on it." And I do think we're at the point now with waiting for the budget where it's a little bit like you had a test at the doctor's. And they told you there was something worrying in your stools sample, but then they said, "Come and see us in 3 months." So on that slightly gratuitous metaphor, I'm going to bring in Aisha, Baroness. Aisha is Baroness, isn't it?
It is, believe it or not.
I mean, it does feel, Aisha, that the Labour news cycle has moved from bad news to policy in the last week. Is that a better place to be?
Definitely a better place to be. I mean, let's be honest, the last couple of weeks have been pretty difficult for the Labour Party. I think that the thing that a lot of people in the Labour Party, like myself, are just really questioning on a really fundamental, philosophical, moral level is, why didn't I get Taylor Swift tickets? Like, I am just
why, yeah,
gutted.
What have I got to do?
I'm gutted.
Well, you are wearing glasses as I talk to you. Those yours? Did you pay for those?
I did. I'm very expensive. These are Stella McCartney from Boots. Also, I actually know the man in question quite well, Waheed Ali. Nothing. Not a sausage. Nothing from him. I've dangled my poverty. Nothing. I actually...
Dangled my poverty is an interesting phrase for... I mean, I'm always on the lookout for titles for these episodes. That is an early front runner. I mean, obviously, you do Times Radio and I pop up on your show most Fridays and stuff. I mean, I should use this as a moment to trail, as we would say in the radio profession, that I am doing the Saturday morning show 10 to 1. So
you're going to be doing that regularly?
I've got a couple coming up. I don't know. Maybe they're just trying out, you know, seeing who does what. Because I just explained to the listeners that in a lot of radio, they have a thing called a worm, which shows as in real time how the show is doing, when people are tuning in, tuning out. Not for all the radio, but it gives you an idea. So I've been told that I need to get my worm moving in the right direction.
I think so, yeah. I mean, look, we've all had problems with our flaccid worms in the past. We'll be hoping that you'll be the equivalent of Radio Viagra, Jeff. That's what you're going to be.
The way you said that was very FM radio as well. Radio Viagra. That actually sounds like a radio station for impotent middle-aged men. Welcome to Radio Viagra. We're just going to mention Lucy Pinder on the hour every hour.
It sounds like the kind of like radio station which would mop up a lot of like men that have been cancelled from, you know, like a sort of mainstream BBC like radio station.
I mean, you've dangled your poverty and you've Radio Viagra'd and you've mopped up. I feel like we're in the gutter already.
Also, I do think you've got to be careful now because you are, you know, you're in the Times radio stable. You'll probably be in the House of Lords very soon.
I'd like that. Yeah, I don't really want to be an MP, but a Lord Norcott. I mean, but then the problem is that who's the Russian fella? Yevgeny, Boris's
oh,
mate.
Oh, yeah, Lebedev.
He stole my face.
He did. Oh, my God. I can't unsee it now, Jeff. I can't. The only thing you'll need to do to make it a little bit more Lebedev, you'll have to get some sort of like Grecian 2000. You'll have to significantly darken your beard.
I look like his older brother. I mean, I wouldn't mind going to his parties, I'll be honest. So we're going to talk about what's coming up. We're going to get the inside info from Baroness Aisha. No, it'd be Baroness Hazarika, wouldn't it? But I'm going to call you Baroness Aisha because we're mates. We're going to have a slightly more light-hearted look at male objectification. There's the show Rivals is out this week on Disney Plus. Have you seen this being trailed, Aisha?
Not only have I seen it being trailed, I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning glued to it the other night.
So this is absolute catnip for certain women of a certain age. And I'm not saying you, but there is that sort of, it's very erotically charged. It's very old-fashioned kind of ladies in stilettos, men in breeches, all this kind of business. I watched the first bit because basically I'd heard that there was a penis in it. And I think a lot of these shows now, they get it out there via PR that there's a knob in it. And then a lot of people at least watch one episode to see whose penis it is, what kind of penis it is. But the point that I saw an article in the Metro saying that the actor in it confirms that it is his penis. And I started to wonder, has mainstream media drifted towards male objectification? You know, like we all remember when Sharon Stone uncrossed her legs and there were a million articles about that. You probably wouldn't write that now saying, or is that her? Well, I'm not going to say it, which sort of demonstrates the point. But we're openly talking about penile in Rivals. talking about Paul Mescal, who's in Gladiator 2. We're talking about his fights. So we're going to talk, Ed, don't say it like that. We're going to talk in and around that sort of area. And then in the Patreon only, we're just going to have a sort of a more general chat about the US presidential election. I don't know if any of the listeners saw the Donald Trump, the shift that he did at McDonald's. Have you seen the video of him at McDonald's?
Incredible.
I mean, what a genius political move. It just works, doesn't it? It sort of works.
Well, it works because he does look very McDonald's. Like, if you were going to associate with him, it'd either be sort of Watsits or McDonald's. Like, he feels like he could be a good brand ambassador. You know the colour of the cheese in the burgers? I mean, that is very much him.
Look, I see it more positively with Donald. He is a person of colour, and therefore all Gen Z should vote for him. Okay, new patrons. Just a heads up to new patrons. And I should mention this just generally, is that the special of my last tour, Basic Bloke, is out on Thursday, filmed live in Stevenage. And that'll be up on the Next Up comedy platform. So if you get a subscription there, you'll be able to see that from Thursday. If you're a patron, I have negotiated a half-hour version for you for free, which will be up for Thursday, but with a discount code. So look out for that. Now, I don't know if you know, Aisha, but one thing I do is with my patrons, they get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. But as a thank you to them, I take the piss out of them based on their names. So I'm just going to go through some names. We're just going to speculate who they sound like. Steve Clayton. I mean, he sounds like somebody out of Rivals. The businessman Steve Clayton throbbed into the room.
Thrusted into the room.
Yes, Steve. Although, having said that, the next guy is called Mark Long. And you're not going to believe this. The third guy is called Wayne Cox. So Long Cox Layton. I mean, that now sounds like a village in Suffolk.
Lord Cox,
yeah. I mean, those guys...
Baron Cox.
Baron, I mean, that sounds like a condition. And we've got Alan Pope. Alan Pope would be the guy... Popey is such a great nickname for a bloke, isn't it? Yeah. Is Popey coming? Yeah. Oh, I fucking love Popey.
Yeah.
I ain't seen Popey in years. Bit of a legend. He just sparkles at every stag do. He has to leave early because he's actually got quite a successful business.
What kind of car do you think he drives?
He was the first one in his friendship group to get a Beamer. He's one of those blokes that other men discuss their car. You've seen Popey's Beamer. Men are quite good. I don't know what girls are like, if there's like an alpha female, whether or not they're jealous of her or whatever. But with blokes, we're quite happy to go, leader, leader. If there's like one guy... We want one guy to be the guy. Is that a similar thing in female
circles?
No.
There's a lot more vying for sort of, you know, top dog, top bitch, however you want to say it. I think like if a woman sort of puts herself, and maybe, I mean, there's something very interesting about this. I think if a woman sort of puts herself forward to be like the natural leader of the pack will turn on her very, very quickly. Mm. Don't like that. And then you just get a lot of women kind of vying for sort of natural leader, and there's a lot of frenemies, you know what I mean? There's like people pretending to be friends with people,
gritted teeth,
but actually don't like it because they think like she's sort of, does she think she's better than us? Does she think there's a lot of that going on? There's a lot of that, but I think the kind of things, like if you're talking about Popey's Beamer, the kind of things that make women impressed by other women, and it's so anti-feminist, by the way, it's things like significant weight loss. Like that is, that's always really respected, like on a, just on a sort of woman to woman basis. Good tweetments, good nails, good grooming.
Good nails.
Yeah. I think maintaining a kind of high level of grooming is quite alpha.
Yeah, and I've noticed that women use the word immaculate. Men don't use that word, but women say she's always immaculately turned out. And there's a reverential kind of way that they say that.
The weird thing about that as well is, right, it's not about natural beauty and what genealogy has given to you and genetics. It's not about that. It's about how much work and money you put into it and time.
Yeah. It's long gone when women were sort of trying to impress men. It's now become this weird, like, nuclear arms race with each other. I mean, getting your nails did, which I think is the phrase, getting your hair did, that's the phrase that girls use now. That was such a rare treat, like, for my mum. She might have got, like, it would only be weddings or christenings, maybe a funeral. But now, these nail bars, how often do you get your nails done?
I've actually literally just hot-footed it. In fact, the reason why we had to move this appointment, because you and I were actually meant to be speaking early in the day, but then it clashed with my nail appointment, so I had to move it.
So not feminist.
Listen.
You literally moved a work engagement for your nails. And you're wearing pink. What's going on?
I know, it's ridiculous. But you know, right, so you go to the nail bar now and it's not even as simple as just getting your nails done, like picking a colour. I mean, I'm quite pedestrian. I've just got like a sort of nice kind of raspberry coloured nail. There are women in there getting the equivalent of like a sort of Rembrandt masterpiece done on each single nail. I mean, that is the level of detail we're talking about now.
I'm just thinking, like, I've got quite a lot of gentlemen of, you know, advancing years listening to this. Well, I need to pull out. I've enjoyed this chat, but I need to pull out of the the nail chat. Like, they go, oh, fuck, he's fucking loose women, Jeff.
You're in too deep. You're in too deep now, Jeff. You've got to, like, this is now reputation risk for you.
Well, look, I think we can go into much safer territory. Is Domain Talking Point, my super patron, David Domain, who keeps an eye on previous shows and picks up on things and elaborates in his own unique way. And I was talking about space travel. I mean, I was talking, by the way, I got a lot of pushback for the last episode. I had Konstantin Kissing on, and we were talking about Elon Musk. And it appears we might have been kissing Elon Musk's arse, which if it came across that way, I'm very both ways on Elon Musk. I think he's a tit on some things, you know, but equally there's a part of me thinks, you know, richest man in the world, maybe talk to him, you know, that I'm in that position.
Listen, you just want that £1 million check, don't you?
We'll come to that in the Patreon. People might not know about this, but he's trying to bribe voters, and we'll talk about that in the Patreon-only section. But I was basically asking the question about space travel. Basically, say, does anyone give a shit? You know, media always cares. It's always great in the news cycle for an end of news going, and Elon Musk has successfully launched a rocket. And I go, I just don't know who cares about this. So David has said that it is important because of the inventions we get from it. So we've got a few inventions from space travel here. Scratch resistant lenses. Did you know that? That's from space travel.
Why?
Ear thermometers. I don't know why that would have been invented in space. Shoe insoles. Now you're talking my language. If you're talking about heel and arch support, are you telling me Skechers are from space? Because they're so good. This is not even an ad. I actually enjoy walking when I wear Skechers.
Skechers are almost like, and there's like no gravity involved in a Skecher, is there? It feels like you're floating.
I feel like it.
I'm just going to say with your heel, are you one of these guys, Jeff? I'm not saying you're short, but I'm just saying. Do you get those kind of like concealed like heel raises to lift you up?
No, but Skechers
do. Denied that a bit quickly.
No. But you're right. Skechers for a bloke, it's a stacked heel already. You don't need it. Also, Hoka trainers, they're quite expensive. They're like the rich man Skecher. I've got one of them that's adding at least an inch and a half. And now we're back to talking about Jilly Cooper stuff. Tap water filters come from space. So memory foam. Oh, my God. I mean, I spoke about this in the last tour. Is that, you know, the Tories ran out of, you know, it was like when people get saying what has got better in the last 14 years. I always thought they should have gone mattresses. Because mattresses, like in the last 10 years, we went from having the same shitty mattresses to people throwing £2,000 at a temper. What mattress game have you got?
Actually, my mattress game is awful because this is me dangling my poverty again, my relative poverty. My mattress is, honestly, I'm not joking, it's about 21 years old. And I actually, this is why I've got a bad back. My mattress is so old. I actually need to get a new mattress.
Do you got to stop throwing away money on raspberry nails and invest in something that you do for 8 hours a day? Just as a very blokey bit of advice from me to you. As a friend.
Listen, don't mansplain me about my choices, Norcott.
You spoke nails whilst wearing pink.
I've lost the room, haven't I?
So a quick thank you and a fuck you. I'll do the thank you. And that's to all the people buying work in progress tickets. So if you go to Live Nation, I'm going to be out working up next show in March and April of next year. A lot of them have sold out. I'll tell you the ones which have sold out. We're doing the smaller room in Southend. I will be returning for the bigger room at some point there. Guildford sold out. We're going to add a date. Reading, Fareham, Sudbury sold out. But we're going to add a date, and so has Otley. So thank you for anybody buying tickets. You get that thing as well, Aisha, when you tour, where people, they don't just think that you're not doing a date in Scotland. It's, why do you hate Scotland? Jeff, what have you got against Scotland? It's the same thing I've got against the Southwest, which is the other one where they say, why do you hate the Southwest? It's fucking miles away. Okay. So if I'm doing work in progress dates, it's all on a smaller scale. Ideally, I'd do it in my shed.
No, Jeff, I think you're just like a massive racist against the Scots and the Cornish, and you've got to go and educate yourself.
Scots and the Cornish, two people unwisely thinking they could go it alone.
that, I'm just trying to think, what is the exit? For, is it, it should be like Dexit, like, you know, Dorset or like Devon.
I think the exit thing has become like Watergate, where we need a new kind of compound word there. Anything with something, like it's what, like there's some Irish people that want to leave the EU and it's Irexit.
Yeah.
That again sounds like something you need medical attention for. What is your fuck you?
Oh, right. My general thing that just does my head in is, why can't you find a phone number for any organization in this country anymore? It's very quick to sign up for things, very quick to sign up for various subscriptions. You've got to give all your personal data in, all that kind of thing. And then you want to leave, or you've got an issue, and can you actually speak to a normal human being on a phone? Absolutely. Honestly, I actually might introduce a private members bill in the House of Lords mandating anybody who sets up as a bloody proper business have a phone number with a real human being at the end of it.
Well, this is the problem. Have you gone through the complaints process as well? I recently, we went away with Tui. The way that they do it now, it used to be like, let me speak to your line manager if you weren't happy with the proposed solution. Now they just say, no, you can't do that. You go, I want to. They go, we don't do that anymore. This is it. And if you, because what I think they've worked out is we're all basically fronting and we won't follow it through.
Yeah.
You know, it's either this or atoll, mate. So good luck. And like, well, you should be hearing from me. I'm definitely really am going to contact atoll and devote 20 hours of my life to trying to get another £100 voucher.
And also the thing is, like, because they've totally got all the power now. And as you work your way up to full Karen, can I speak? I'd like to speak to the manager, please. You're absolutely right. They just love that you're sweating a bit at this point. Your heart rate is up. You're kind of, you know, you've got dry mouth. You're basically leading up to the, I'd like to speak to your manager. And they're just like, fuck you.
Yeah, we changed that. Good luck.
You remember that whole thing about the consumer's ever always right? It's like, absolutely not. And as you say, the power imbalance, if you actually want to pursue anything in life, it's like it's a full-time, you can't actually have a job and follow up any complaint, like the two, it's just not compatible.
It's not worth it. And having been to the small claims court once in my life, do you know, I took an unlosable case to the small claims court and lost. Genuinely got my ass fucking handed to me.
It's horrible, honestly,
when my friends ask this question, I say, look, you've got to really want to know that you want to know this story, because me losing in court is funny. That's funny. How I get you there, stories-wise, it's to do with double glazing and doors. It's a whole thing.
Did you represent yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I went full, like, kind of like Tom Cruise. I want the I can't know. Basically,
you can't handle the truth.
What happened was, and I'd done a bit of Mash Report at the time. I don't know if the magistrate recognised me, but when I walked out, I was like, she's such a Remainer. She's one of those spider brooch women. And so she hated me immediately. But the truth was, I don't know, she definitely knew who I was, but I could tell that she just took against me immediately. So, you know, like if you do stand up, you have a good instinct for the room, right? Have you lost the room? I lost the room within a minute because she said to me, well, where is Mrs. Norcott, who also filed this case with you? I was like, she's at home with the kid. And I said it like a right sexist. And it was just because I was already anxious. I thought small claims court would be you just go in a room that looks like a primary school classroom and you talk it out. Turns out proper judge, no jury, but you have to sit in the fucking one of the most stressful. I'm having PTSD. All right, let's move on and talk about politics. In terms of the Labour operation now, it's probably a good week for you to come on, Baroness Hazarika, because any of the last 6 weeks, I would have been absolutely gleefully tearing into Labour. But it does seem to have shifted a bit. Now, obviously, Sue Gray, the big coup, Sue Gray. Oh, just interestingly, going back to that point that you said, I was hosted News Quiz last week with, or the week before, with Anoushka Astana was on. You know, she was for ITN. And she actually said to me that most of the people briefing against... No, she said it on air, so I can say this. She said most of the people briefing against Sue Gray were women. You don't necessarily have to comment, but it wasn't necessarily the lads around Starmer. But he's got one more lad around him now, Morgan McSweeney. So is all this improvement because the ginger ninja, Morgan McSweeney, has come in, he's seized it by the scruff of the neck, and he's gripped it. That's the word they use in Westminster. Has he gripped it?
I think it's probably a bit early to tell whether he's gripped it. I think Sue Gree vacating the group chat has probably just calmed things down because, you know, I know Sue very well and I thought, you know, she was a good thing for the party. But clearly there was all kinds of conflict going on within Downing Street and within the operation. And she was just becoming a story. Like probably every time she did anything, it gets to the point. So Downing Street's a really weird place. And I worked there when Gordon Brown was Prime Minister. It is the most psychologically dark, stressful building. First of all, it's not a functional building to be running the government from. It's basically like a house with quite small rooms in it. Like, you know, everybody's in sort of separate offices. I think there's something kind of steeped into the walls where everybody turns against each other. Everyone starts like hating each other. It's like a sort of circular firing squad in there. So I think it probably got to the stage where, you know, if even Sue went to the loo, somebody would be briefing out that she'd like got diarrhea and she was like doing a dirty protest.
Loo
or whatever,
you know,
exactly. Yeah. So I think things got so bad with her rightly or wrongly or fairly or unfairly. So I think her going was just a kind of moment of catharsis for everybody. And sometimes as well, when you're in politics and everybody is behaving really badly. So probably what's happened is she's wound people up. Other people have been horrible to her. Everybody's now in a kind of being awful and despicable and being bad. And sometimes, you know, it's a bit like when people are having a sort of fight, something really bad needs to happen. And everyone goes, oh my God. And just like, okay, we've all just gone out of control. Do you know what I
know
I mean?
You mean like a purge. I did feel that there was a degree of that. I mean, I felt that the stories all had legitimacy to varying degrees, but there was also a point like, right, you know, certainly with the press, right, you're the government now, you're going to get a few digs. All right, you ready? Brace, because where do you want it? The stomach or the face? You know, it was a little bit like that. And you know, Morgan McSweeney might just benefit in terms of a kind of cyclical nature, but the perception is already that things have stabilised. I've got to ask you an important political question here, as we are slightly theming this around male objectification. Morgan McSweeney, hot or not?
Oh my God, I can't believe you're asking me that question. Not my cup of tea.
He's mine. I'll go for that.
What's very interesting, he's very clever, very soft-spoken Irishman.
You're sweetening the deal with everything you say here. I've always admired like a guy with red hair that carries it with confidence. I've always thought that that is quite an impressive thing. He's sort of like Ron Weasley after a glow-up, isn't he?
I think he's the kind of guy would probably wear those kind of shoes that you do that, you know, he's quite diminutive as well. I think he's probably got those kind of like, you know, sort of, you know, hovercraft shoes that you like. No, he's super smart, but he is also like unbelievable. You know this word ruthless, which is thrown around at the moment about Keir Starmer? He's really ruthless. I think his like ruthlessness comes from Morgan McSweeney. So I've known Morgan for a long, long time in politics, and he's been around local government a lot. He did a lot of work kind of fighting off the BNP in areas like Barking, and he'd always come into a meeting. He'd be very, very soft-spoken, but he has got a bit of an air of menace because when he spoke, like, everyone would just kind of go shh, and like, everyone would like kind of hush and listen to him.
You've got to have a little bit of, but look, I mean, bastard in like that job. Whether it's Cummins, whether it's Alistair Campbell, and I'm not saying this is unique to a bloke, but you've just got to have the Sue Gray was the least chief of staff name that there's ever that there's ever been. It's sort of like I always felt like Sue Gray and Jackie Weaver kind of knew each other somehow.
No, that is the podcast we all want to see.
Yeah, the Sue Gray and Jackie Weaver, you know, kind of women who wear twin sets and run the country. That would be the podcast.
But again, I suppose this is now going to be the feminist in me that kind of kicks back. What's interesting about that is, right, Sue Gree was the first woman in that position for a long, long time in the Labour Party. Because what happens in the Labour Party, right, the Labour Party has got better at putting women front of house. So there's loads more female MPs. We've got Angela Rayner as Deputy Prime Minister. Of course, Rachel Reeves, very, very powerful, and she's powerful behind the scenes. But sometimes what would happen is you'd have good sort of front of house women, but then behind the scenes, which is the power behind the throne and the senior vice, it was a lot of men, right? Like they had all the power, like you've just said yourself, the kind of Alistair Campbells or whatever. So, you know, for a lot of us, it was like, oh, it's good that somebody called Sue has come in. That is a good sort of thing, but obviously it slightly kind of ended in tears. So,
well, I mean, we have had some really good homely female names. We've had Sue Gray, we've had Theresa May and Liz Truss. Sue, Theresa and Liz, that's your mum's like canasta night, isn't it, really? I mean, you mentioned Rachel Reeves there, powerful woman. I mean, I don't think she's smiled since July. And I know you can't tell women to smile in 2024, and I know that there's a political reason why she hasn't smiled since the Euros, I think, because it's been...
Oh, my God, I'm expecting a cheer up, love.
Well, economically, not, I wouldn't dare say. She seems quite fearsome. But the point is they've cultivated this message ever since they got in about, you know, the black hole expanded, then they made the black hole bigger, but we made them do it, like when your dad would kick the dog, look what you made me do, you kids, you never shut up, right? So Labour have cultivated this message for quite a long time, and it's all working towards this money shot. Again, money shot. There's a theme here. Yeah, I've got to stop this.
Please.
With the budget, I mean, I'm now starting to wonder, because there's the capital gains tax story has sort of gone away. Labour's starting to calm some of the more hysterical fears around the budget. Is it a little bit that they've managed it to, oh, it's bad, but not as worse than we feared? Is that your anticipation of how it will go?
I mean, I think it's going to be a really tough budget, actually. But I think this is the fight that they're willing and able and wanting to have. You know, they don't want to be having a fight about freebies or Taylor Swift tickets or glasses or dresses. They don't want to be having that kind of fight. The fight they want to have is a sort of big ideological fight about the future of the country and really big decisions like on tax. So I actually think this budget is going to be pretty difficult for the party, but I think that's what they want. I think Rachel Reeves particularly, and again, I've known Rachel for a long time. I mean, she is really, really tough, and she has got a really strong sense. She's not one of these politicians who sort of swithers around in terms of like, oh yeah, this is what the polls are saying, or she is like hardcore. All the stuff that is coming out that is quite unpopular, she believes in it, and she does believe in sort of fiscal rectitude and, you know, being kind of tight with the public purse, all that stuff. But I think they're ready for a stooshy. I think they're ready for a big, big row with like the Telegraph. They're ready for a row as they had on private schools. They're ready for a big row on things like inheritance tax. I think there's certain rows they're prepared to lean in on. I think Rachel Reeves is actually going to really enjoy this budget. I think there's going to be a lot of backbenchers really crapping themselves because they're sitting on majorities of like 300 and things like that. She's somebody kind of really properly like relishes a fight. Like she loves a good fight. So I think she's like game on, bring it on.
I think the fringe, I mean, we shouldn't read too much into optics and aesthetics, but the fringe is very much saying I'm not fucking about. Do you know what I mean? This fringe, the budget is this fringe. I think you're right that they might be relishing the fight because a lot of the things that will piss off the right-wing press are potentially things that might play out okay with a broader audience, you know. So when you talk about whether or not they do something with inheritance tax or whether capital gains on share sales, these will be things that will affect percentage-wise a small amount of people. So I suspect that from my point of view, whether it's reasonable or not what they're doing and whether or not it might stifle business activity, is I have my reservations about that. But there'll be things that broadly people might kind of want, because I don't know if you ever follow Aaron Bastani, but he's got this great sort of phrase that he trots out, which he says that, you know, the British public are generally closer to Corbyn on economics and Farage on immigration. And we sort of forget that a lot of left-wing economic stuff still polls quite well. You know, so you say, should people that are wealthy enough have to pay more money on the shares that they sell? A lot of people go, well, I don't have that. I'm not selling shares. Absolutely. So we might see, do you think we might see a little improvement in Labour's polling?
Well, I mean, I think this budget is still going to be tough. I actually think that Labour will probably have quite a bumpy ride over the budget. There'll be some good things, right? Like, so we know the fact's been briefed out quite heavily. There's likely to be a big injection into the NHS, probably about like £10 billion. Mm-hmm. So that will give them a good thing to say. However, we also do know that there are probably going to be some cuts. But remember, Labour's kind of big picture thing is, it's almost like, you know, people come in wanting to be popular, Labour, and have some kind of honeymoon period. Labour's like, no, we're not having any honeymoon. We're not even having like a dirty weekend in Margate. We're not even like, we're doing none of that. Like, we're actively coming in to be massively, massively unpopular and just like have loads of beef with everybody right now. So I think it's actually going to be quite tricky after the budget. But Rachel Reeves is going to be like, I'm the Iron Chancellor. I'm ready to face down the right, and I'm prepared to face down the left as well. Like, for example, on welfare, like there's going to be some big cuts to welfare coming down the track. Think of her like Kill Bill. She's like sort of Uma Thurman in Kill Bill, right? She's just taking everybody on.
Fringe.
Yeah, with the fringe.
I mean, she's what you're describing there is kind of like when I went into teaching, there was always that idea that you don't smile till Christmas. That was the idea. Is that you just show them you're a double-eyed bastard and you don't smile. So is that what Labour are? Labour have come in and they're trying to be that Mr. Crabtree type geography teacher. Don't fucking mess with Crabtree.
Yeah, because I think at the beginning, Keir Starmer probably wanted to be like the totally like do-gooder supply teacher that everyone liked, right? Do you know when he first came in? I think he was trying to be like supply teacher that everyone liked. But now Rachel Reeves and Morgan McSweeney have turned up. They're now like, no, we're going to be like, we're like reform school teacher now. We're like absolutely terrifying.
Reeves and McSweeney. I mean, that might be a new kind of catchphrase. Every time there's a story in the press that's got his paws in it, people just start going, McSweeney, da, 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 da. There you go. Look, if people didn't like the raspberry nails thing, that is absolutely one for men of a 1970s vintage. Okay, just a quick hi. We're going to welcome the remaining new patrons. We've got a few new patrons. So we've got Ian Bettles. Ian Bettles sounds like he would have a voice like that. Ian Bettles, yes. You've come through to Ian Bettles' landline here. Sorry, that's not Ian. Is that how your voice sounds, Ian Bettles? Imagine if he was a big, tough fucking gladiator of a man.
Yeah, and he's going to come to one of your gigs and like...
Yeah, but beat the shit out of me while still having that voice. That would be the most emasculate thing. Yeah, Ian Bell, you like that? I'm slapping the shit out of you, Noel Cart. We've got James Sprake. Sprake is... Sprake. I don't know if I like that surname or not. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it, but it's...
Sprake. It sounds like Sprake. A sort of between a spring and a break. It sounds like a medical condition, doesn't it?
I'm afraid, yes, it is it's a clean Sprake. They're actually the most painful. You know that thing where you've been better off actually having your legs sawn off than having a Sprake? You know, like when you get that with a cracked tooth is apparently worse than just completely having half your lower jaw ripped off. That's what Dennis always tell you. And then we've got Sean McGrath. And it's, you know, look, I watched football in the 90s. Very hard to not go, Sean McGrath. See, Sean McGrath and Popey on the same stag do. Are you fucking joking? Sean McGrath, he came over here the same coach as Morgan McSweeney. Sorry, just going back to Morgan McSweeney, I'm clearly a bit obsessed with.
Oh my God, you're totally obsessed.
But you know his origin story. Like, if you actually say it, if I say it, it sounds like I'm being racist against Irish people because it's so stereotypical. Is that he was living in Cork and then he just got on a coach and came to work straight on a building site. Like, that is pretty much his story originally, but that sounds like I'm being xenophobic.
No, that is a story. I mean, sure, someone's going to like play like him in the film. I think his like family were really connected into politics as well. No, it's a fantastic backstory. And he actually lives in Scotland now. He lives in Scotland.
Doesn't play by the rules.
No, he just
doesn't. McSweeney. Da, da, na, na. I'm trying to get it going. So just reminds me to remind you that, on the next up comedy streaming platform, Basic Bloke, live in Stevenage. Never before and never again probably will Stevenage provide the setting for a comedy special. If you're from Stevenage, I can only apologise up front. All the things that I say about it are deeply hurtful. But the point is, you live in Stevenage, so you already know. All right, we're going to talk about male objectification here. It's already been a theme. I've gleefully participated when it came to Morgan McSweeney. But just go back to Rivals as a show. So there is a scene quite early on where they're playing naked tennis, right? And you see the guys downstairs. I don't know. His privates. That's such a British word, isn't it? His privates. And then you see Emily Atack in the All Together very briefly. Right.
Yeah.
And then, because there was a feeling a while ago, wasn't there, on like House of Games? That's Richard Osman's show.
Yeah, that's a very different show.
Game of Thrones.
Nobody wants to see anybody naked on Richard Osman's show.
I was just about to talk about nudity and sex scenes on the House of Games. That would be, I mean, Jesus Christ, tea time. I mean, it's already a great show.
Yeah.
It would take it to the next level, but. A lot of people back in the day, a lot of women said, well, it's not fair because we see boobs and stuff and we see, when are we going to see the willies, right? We start seeing willies now. I've just got to say, Aisha, I don't think you can equate boobs and willies on the scale. I think willies are boobs, you know, boobs are still, but willies, they're not the same. If you saw either of those on a beach, which are you more worried about?
Oh, definitely. But like, I think this is a sort of thing that I don't know where it's kind of like come from, because I honestly do not think there's loads of women that were like clamoring to see willies on screen. I mean, I think they were probably clamoring to see less boobage on screen.
Ah, right.
Do you know what I mean? But that did
they misinterpreted.
Yeah, they've been
we've
like,
listened
yes.
to the female audience. We've got loads yes. of cocks in this.
We've done a lot of research with our entirely male team. And the answer is more trouser snake. I think that's what the answer is. And
yeah.
nobody really wants like. And the weird thing about it is, it'll be like the odd willy just kind of crops up in these kind of random shows, but it's so kind of like, oh, it's not like women are like, oh, hello. Everyone's like grossed out by it, and it normally looks really weird, and everyone's been like, oh. But I have to say, I have watched Rivals, and it is fantastic. The thing about Rivals, which is really good, in an era where everything is quite PC, and I'm a right old kind of lefty feminist, whatever, it's very fun, and it's very funny, and the writing is very good. And it's quite an equal opportunity. So the first scene you see is it's kind of male thrusting buttocks on a Concorde as it smashes the sound barrier. And you've got some champagne corks sort of popping off, and you think, that's just funny. No one's offended by that. It's just funny. It's just silly. And it's kind of funny.
Well, I think that also there is that fascination. You see a lot of shows now will delve back to times when people could just smoke and people would drink during the day. There was I suppose people are eulogising or romanticising a time when, you know, I'm not saying like grabbing people on the arse. People want that to come back in the workplace, but there's a kind of fascination for an era when that happened. But in the mix of all of this, the way that men are portrayed and spoken about in mass media, mainstream media, it has changed a lot. There was the article about whether or not this guy had a stunt penis. We've got to say that quickly. So I don't know if people are aware. So quite often if you see penises in these shows, and particularly if they're particularly large, it will be because they've gone for a prosthetic, because they've said to the guy, do you want your penis to be seen? He's like, you're joking, a film crew, I'm already nervous and it's cold. And then they say, all right, you can have a stunt penis. Do you want the small, medium, or large one? Obviously, being a bloke, they generally go for the large one. So don't feel too paranoid, lads.
But can I just say, I completely feel the pain that you gentlemen might be feeling about the inadequacy and the comparison. But welcome to our world. I remember, like, on the day, and it wasn't even that long ago, you know, with the Page Three girls, which I'd be like the only woman in the room preparing like Ed Miliband for PMQs. They'd be like, all the newspapers like spread out, and just like a massive pair of tits staring at me, and that was not Bob or Tom, like the senior advisors across the room. You know, it was just like, it was quite awkward just sitting there as the only woman in the room with like a woman topless just staring out at you.
It was a weird combination, wasn't it? News and boobs. It was on the same page. It was, I mean, all I'll say is we were happier in the 90s, but make of that what you will. I'm just going to leave that. I'll leave that there. But there was also an article this week about Paul Mescal, who's a bit of a sex symbol. He was in that comedy drama about Ordinary People or something like that.
Normal people.
Very. I watched it. It was very good. He was naked in that, and then he's in Gladiator 2, and he's built up the six pack. And there was a whole article about his thighs, and it was written by a female journalist. And I just thought, have we sort of arrived at a point where I get what you're saying about old men have had thousands of years of this? And look, I can remember seeing Gail Porter's backside being beamed onto Big Ben, so I totally get it. The only thing I wonder from a sort of socio point of view about young males is they didn't get the fun bit that blokes. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say fun. The absolutely wrong,
terrible,
traumatic period
awful.
We went through in the noughties with the lads mags. So I do wonder if there's a brewing kickback at some point. Like, I've been out with like female friends in the not too recent past where they sort of flirt with like young lads who are waiters, and I think it's just coming at some point. There's going to be a lad. There'll be some sort of backlash. Or they'll go, sorry, I found that very inappropriate, your comment there about the charcuterie board.
I think the thing is, though, right, I think the sort of male, the female gaze on the male body is definitely more of a thing, particularly in the age of streaming. So take shows like Bridgerton, right?
Yeah.
Basically like porn for menopausal women, right? That is loads, or pole dart with Aidan like Turner in it. And actually in Rivals, Aidan Turner gets his kit off very, very quickly. You know,
stop the fella.
Like that is like a, you know, they had to put that in to guarantee that audience. So I think that is definitely a thing. But I think like for a lot of women, they're not as visually led as men are, because we are obviously much more complicated and intelligent and complex. So I think the things that often the men that women really fancy on TV and stuff, they're not necessarily like physically that hot, but there's something about them that we just really like. Is their sense of humor, or it's something about their brain, or I think
power.
A lot of women, power is a big affidavit. Like one of the best people on Rivals is Danny Dyer wearing an absolutely outrageous wig, like a terrible, terrible comedy wig. And he's got a terrible sort of porn star moustache. But women are going nuts for him. They just cannot get enough of Danny Dyer in
his confidence. It's inner confidence. There's the bloke having irrational confidence. Because women question themselves more. Blokes, every once in a while, we just think, yeah, I'm mummy's little soldier. Of course, I'm the absolute bollocks. And that's fascinating. They're like, what is he confident about? But
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's changing for younger men. Well, I suppose there was a period where we sort of looked at the body dysmorphia women had. When instead of actually saying, well, why don't we reduce it for everybody? What we've done is we've just equalised it for young males.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
good work, everybody. Well done.
Well done. We're all totally paranoid and self-hating now. Well done. Well done.
They're stunt penises. Aisha Azarika, it's great to have you back on the show. I'm going to be in the States. I'm going to the States. And I didn't think about it, but I'm taking my son out there on Monday. So if you don't hear from me again, it'll be some sort of like Civil War thing that I've got caught up in.
Wow.
Obviously, I'll have gone Team Trump.
You recreate that thing with that guy. Do you remember with the sort of like Viking horns?
Yeah. I'll storm the Capitol. But a cross between that and Rambo, maybe.
Yeah, I could see that. With your sketches on. The other thing that's incredible about that photograph, I still don't know how that man's trousers stayed up because it was just extraordinary.
Yeah, well, I don't have an arse either, so I'm going to need to find out his secret. But obviously, you're on Times Radio every week. I'm going to be on the news quiz again this week. I'm on Times Radio hosting on Saturday. Then obviously, on Thursday, the next up comedy special is coming out. Hype, hype, hype. Sell, sell, sell. And listen, thanks again, Aisha Azarika, for being on the show. And I'll be back with another show soon. We'll be right back.